Hey there, everybody. Welcome to Fantide, the podcast for all those complex and complicated conversations about the gray areas in our lives. I'm entertainment journalist Travell Anderson.
And I am Jared Hill, politics and pop culture journalist. Coming up on the show, we're diving into a chat with one of the main voices in the new documentary on Russell Simmons, but more broadly, about how the Me Too movement has been started by a black woman, but has really left a lot of black women out of the conversation. That's going to be a little bit later on in the show. But first, we want to let you know about something that's happening around here at Maximum Fun. It's called the Max Fun Drive.
Yeah, so you've heard all of the ads up to this point. I know you've heard them because we've gotten messages about them. Max Fun, in case you don't know, is an artist-owned and audience-supported platform. What that means is we need your support to help us continue making making this greatness of a podcast that you all say you love. We've got some details about the ways in which you can do that. Jared, you're going to tell them a little bit about it now.
Absolutely. If you want to be a part of the Max Fun Drive and support this show and all the great shows coming from Maximum Fun, you can go to MaximumFun.org/join for more information on how you can join. And if you're already a member, you can upgrade your membership and you can include your favorite show. Which show might that be, Travell?
It better be this one.
I would imagine so. So make sure to go to MaximumFun.org/join for more information on how you can become a member, how you can upgrade, and how you can choose Fantide as one of your favorite shows. All right, we'll have more on that a little bit later. But Travell, I think we should probably go ahead on and pass this popcorn. How are you feeling?
Let's do it. We've got a spicy one to get into this week.
Oh my gosh. You guys had so much to say. This is Pass the Popcorn, a segment in which we comment on the foolishness or the debates we see happening on our timelines. And everyone in our timelines had opinions on Friday afternoon as the internet lost its bowels when Will and Jada discussed the
Not
breakdown.
The
Baby, they lost it all. They were discussing the breakdown and restoration of the relationship between breaking up and coming back together. Jada entered into a romantic relationship or
an entanglement with August.
An entanglement.
A word. If I never hear the word entanglement again, I have heard it enough in the last five days or whatever it's been. Take a listen of a little bit of that conversation between the two of them.
Because I wasn't sure I was ever going to speak to you again.
I know.
Yeah, like the fact that I'm speaking to you again is a miracle.
I would agree.
No, but it ain't for the weak at heart. There's just certain things that you have to go through, and it's like...
And I wish, you know, I wish that wasn't the case. I do.
I sure wish it could be all magic and miracles.
Yeah.
Okay, so here's the thing. I'm tired of people's takes on Will and Jada, on their relationship, on whether they're open or closed or... you know, busting it wide open or shutting it way down. I don't know. Laying it low or spreading it wide. But like, I'm tired of people judging these people's relationship based on their own relationship standards. Like, these people have a relationship that they are happy in, seemingly, that, you know, they are both consenting to. And if they are allowing themselves to have other people, you know, in, at different times, like, and that works for them, how does it impact you? It's just so frustrating to me.
Here's the thing. I feel like people are hearing what they want to hear out of that interview, and they're not listening to the actual words that are being said, both by Will and by Jada, right? Because, like, a lot of people on Twitter keep saying that, like, Jada cheated, right?
And which drives me crazy.
If you listen to the interview, she did not cheat. They had broken up. They had made the decision that they were going to, in their words, figure out how to make themselves happy individually, apart from each other. And Jada engaged in a entanglement with August.
Oh, Lord.
And you know, this, what we see now, is like the fallout of that. But I just feel like people aren't paying attention, and people, you know, there have been rumors, right, about the Smiths being a wild pair,
if you will.
You know, like there have been rumors about them being swingers and rumors about them, right, you know, bringing all of these different people into their bedroom. And some people feel like this situation kind of confirms all of that.
So for me,
maybe it does, maybe it doesn't.
For me, it makes me think that all of the things that we've heard about them could be true. Like, because how many times have we heard about them breaking up, right? Like, I thought, well, Maybe they had broken up. Apparently they had, right?
Like apparently they had, yeah.
You know, every other year we have like Will and Jada have broken up kind of stories that break out. And so the thing that frustrates me about the conversation around open relationships is when people are referring to it as cheating, because I think to myself, like, number one, I'm always fascinated by the emphasis that people put on sex in their relationships, because it, the idea of being open, they're like, I just wouldn't know what to do. And I would, you know, I can't trust him, like all of these different things. But I'm like,
yeah,
if relationships are about more than sex, why does the sex thing become the place where people freak out and lose their fucking minds? But the other part of it is like, the running joke at the least, neither one of us has ever been married, but like the conversation
you
is
you don't
always,
know my life. you could be married right now and you not know that. Things happen in quarantine.
You done?
No.
Okay. but no, the thing about it is, to me, like, the running joke in marriages has always been like the sex is always the first thing to go, right? And so it's like, you guys are so worried about the sex that you're not even having in your relationships, which really is probably the root of it, right? Like, you're just mad because they're doing more fucking than y'all doing, but just with other people. But that's a different conversation.
Well, you know, I just think, you know, last thing I'll say is I think the point that you made about, like, people judging whatever the relationship is that Will and Jada have by their own conceptions of what marriage should look like or relationships should look like is, like, the core issue at play. Ultimately, none of this shit is our business.
Listen. Okay?
Whatever they do, whoever they do, however they do it, whenever they do it.
You want to go, wherever. You want to just go through them all?
But that too, right? That's, it's none of our business. And, you know, in a way, while August was like sharing of his experience, he invited us into this business that isn't ours.
That is not
ours. And so, like, we really are lucky that they addressed it, I feel. And I hope that people take this as an opportunity to do their own introspection about what works and doesn't work for them in a relationship. And particularly because a lot of people have been saying that Jada and Will's marriage, you know, in their whole bad marriage for life little thing they did in the video, is a representation of like a toxic relationship. I hope that people are internalizing these critiques and they aren't being the toxic person and engaging in toxic entanglement in their own life.
Yeah.
Get your own house in order.
The bad marriage for life thing I took as a joke that they've like that they've had between them for a long time.
Right.
Like,
right.
And people were like, oh my God, they just said they, and I'm like, shut up. Like, I don't know. I just don't think enough people have the range to really get into this conversation without sounding ridiculous to me. But well, I feel that way about a lot of things.
I'm gonna say maybe we also don't have the range, so let's keep it moving. How about that?
We're going to take a quick break. Coming up a little bit later, we've got the week's most dishonorable mentions. But up first, we've got a bit of a different format for this week. We're going to go on the record when Drew Dixon joins us next. Fantai's coming right back.
Entanglement with August. All right, beautiful people. As we told you at the start of the podcast, this is the Max Fun Drive moment in the year. And the Max Fun Drive, in case you didn't hear it at the beginning of the show, is the period of time in which we ask you to financially support the work that we do here at Maximum Fun. The network is audience supported, which means that we need your support, your financial contributions in order to continue bringing you this goodness that you get in with our particular show. Well, you always laughing at me.
I just love how you tell them how good it is.
Like, it is because it's so baby, good. I know it is. I know what
give
I
me all this shoulder. Yes,
I know what I contribute. Anyway, if you also feel like the work that we're doing here adds something to your life, which we know it does because you told us, we read your email every week, we read your DMs, your Twitter messages, all of that, you can support us by going to MaximumFun.org/join, and you'll see all of the ways that you can give. Most people choose $5 or $10 a month, and some support at the $20 a month or more. And as always, we know that this time period is a sensitive one, right, for a lot of folks with the Rona doing what she's doing and the economy doing what she's doing. And so we understand if you can't support us at this moment, but if you can, because we know We know some of you out there can. This is an opportunity to do so.
What's really cool is if you join Max Fun, we've got all of these really cool gifts, and every show has our own specific cool like items that are gifts that come out to the listeners. And so we have a Fanti pin that you'll get. And the Fanti pin says "Vary that kinda," like our logo does, and it has like a happy face and a annoyed face like me and Travel. And so you can get that at the $10 level. The custom pin from the show is really, really cool. So we are really working hard as we're going through all of this time to make sure that we bring you all of this really fun content, all of these great shows, and make sure that you check out MaximumFun.org/join for more information on how you can join. As I said, you can also upgrade your membership. You can make sure to designate Fanti as one of your favorite shows. So check out all of that at MaximumFun.org/join.
And we know y'all love the show because you tell us every single week by leaving comments on Apple Podcasts or emailing us or DMing us on all of the social media. And so I just want to shout out Joella B. You know, in case y'all don't know, teachers and academics really love us. Somebody told us that they've been using the show in their academic paper. They cited a quote that something Jarrett said.
I think it was in their doctoral something or other. And I felt really good looking and seeing myself being cited as Anderson and Hill 2020. I appreciated it.
You're a fool. So we have this email here, or this was a comment here left by Joella B, who let us know that they are a 47-year-old white elementary school counselor. And they say, many times I don't know a lot about pop culture that Travel and Jarrett are talking about, but they always make me laugh and think in new ways. They remind me that in hard, uncertain times, I can honor my students of color and my LGBTQIA students by listening, celebrating, and amplifying the stories my students and families are willing to share with me about their experiences in the world. We also had a message from Becky who said that they wanted to share their appreciation for Fanti. It is powerful and meaningful and necessary. I went so far as to base one of my doctoral assignments, there we go, around a small segment of your Why White People Love Wakanda episode. So thank you all again for listening, for supporting us. And if you, like we said, have the financial capabilities, we'd really appreciate you giving us $5 or $10 a month single month.
One of the things that we're going to be doing is a new show called Fanti for Academics. So make sure that you still continue to send in how you're citing us in your papers. Also, that's a lie.
Welcome back to Fanti, y'all. As we mentioned at the top of the show, we're leaning into a little bit of a different format for this week's show. Instead of a traditional Fanti, we're talking about the complex and complicated conversation that is Black women, sexual assault, and the broader movement for Black lives and community accountability. About a month ago, the doc On the Record about allegations of nearly a dozen Black women of sexual assault and harassment by hip-hop mogul Russell Simmons and L.A. Reid premiered on HBO Max.
We encourage everyone to check it out for yourselves, but we were struck by the comments of the lead in the doc. Her name is Drew Dixon. She says that she didn't come forward with her account until some 20 years later because of her love for hip hop, Russell Simmons himself, and the culture, even though the culture had really hurt her. She wanted to protect it. Travel and I got the chance to talk to her a couple of days ago. A bit of a trigger warning, we're not really discussing explicit details of sexual assault. However, this is a discussion about the impacts of sexual assault and rape. So Drew, first of all, thank you so much for being here and being a part of our conversation today. And the documentary telling your story came out at this really interesting nexus of HBO Max launching and having, you know, not so many people on it just yet, but also, more importantly, right around the time that George Floyd was murdered by the police and we saw this massive uprising about anti-Blackness here in the country. And I think because of that, it really got overshadowed and people didn't really see the documentary and were unaware of it. But I imagine plenty of people have seen it. And I, more than anything, first of all, just kind of want to know, how has this time for you been with seemingly getting feedback from people and having incoming? What's this last month and some change been like since the documentary came out for you?
Well, first of all, thank you for having me. And yes, it's been an unusual time for all of us. It's an unprecedented time, literally, for every single human being because of the pandemic and obviously because of the Black Lives Matter protests, for which I'm deeply grateful, and it's so long overdue, and I hope it's real, and I hope it gets us somewhere. So to the extent that perhaps this confluence of events has sort of overshadowed the documentary, what's more important to me than the movie is the movement and the struggle, and I'm glad that's happening. I also hope, however, that the film does get some oxygen, because this film is one of the few pieces that I'm aware of that kind of lives at the intersection of Black Lives Matter and Me Too. And Black women are so often at the forefront of movements for change. Me Too was started by a Black woman, Black Lives Matter was started by Black women. And then somehow the movements get momentum and the Black women get decentered and erased. And that just can't happen. I really can't. It's not about me. I'm 49 years old. I'm grown. So my life is what it is, you know, and I'm grateful and blessed in so many ways. And so it's not about me, but it is about the survivors, the Black women, the Black girls, frankly, the Black men, the gender neutral Black survivors. Everybody watching the response to this film is taking it in and processing it and trying to decide for themselves whether or not there is a safe space for them to come forward, whether they have a right to believe that they deserve to be safe. And one of the things I'm getting a lot of feedback on in social media from people who've seen the film is the chilling effect of the Anita Hill hearings and the way the Black community rallied around Clarence Thomas and not Anita Hill. And they protested against her and they called her out as a traitor to the race, and how that's why I didn't come forward. You know, Anita Hill came forward in 1991. I was raped in 1995. And I was like, oh no, I know how this movie turns out. I don't want to be the character that Anita Hill was in this movie in my life. I don't want to even be in this movie at all. And I've actually had other survivors tell me that they had the same response to Anita Hill, and that's why they didn't come forward. And so I'm very afraid that if this film isn't seen, and not just seen, but embraced by the Black community, we're going to lose another 25 years for survivors who are also going to do what I did and carry it for 22 years. And all of the destructive ways that impacted me that I'm still just unpacking is not what I want for anyone else. So that's a long answer, but that's kind of how it feels in this moment of Black Lives Matter and the film coming out. Mm-hmm. And just the response I've been getting.
You talked about it being about the movement and not, you know, the movie. And I am 100% understanding of where you're coming from there. And then I was thinking about in the film, I think you guys do a really beautiful job of explaining how Black women are erased in these conversations about Me Too. And I wondered if the way that everything happened when this film came out, and it not really being heard or seen by people because of everything, did it feel like another moment of erasure, even though you do support the movement, obviously? But did it feel like that? Because it seemed like it could have.
You know, I was so overjoyed after Sundance that the film got a distributor at all. I'm going to be completely honest with you. Mm-hmm. I went through the like gut punch terror of the film getting erased and our stories getting erased. And when I say our stories, I don't just mean me and the other Russell Simmons survivors. I really mean the story of Black women who lost our bodily autonomy with the Atlantic slave trade and the rape of, let me just be clear, I believe the average age of the Black woman in the Atlantic slave trade was 15. So we're talking about girls, okay? And the fact that for Black women, we're the only group of women that I believe was exposed to rape, not just because the rapist was sadistic, but because the rapist could actually benefit economically by producing the lifetime economic value in the form of a newborn enslaved person as an asset. That's, I don't think anybody else, any other group of women has that history. And so what I was so afraid of when we lost our distribution partner in January was that that story, our story, the story of Black women, would be lost. This rare 95-minute opportunity to talk about a 400-year-old story would somehow never see the light of day, and the people at Sundance would be the only people in the world who would ever see it. And we were sitting around in Park City, the directors and I, talking about, do we need to just upload it to YouTube? I mean, what are we going to do if we don't get another distributor? And so then when HBO Max stepped in, I didn't even know what HBO Max was, I'm going to be honest with you, but I was just so happy. And then when they started running ads with, like, Game of Thrones and, like, real stuff, my kids were like, oh, okay, Mom, like, maybe it's real. Like, okay, that's cool. Like, you are on, like, a real, okay, all right, Mom, you're not. Okay. And so it's like, okay, cool. Like, and so I was just so grateful for, like, any oxygen. And HBO Max has been such a great partner. Like, they really have this team of people that really care about the issue and are in it for the long haul. So I was really okay with having to kind of wait for the clouds to part enough for people to take it in until Russell Simmons started to resurface and get platformed in spaces that I consider important spaces for Black people. And that's when I really started to feel like, okay, wait a minute. Mm-hmm. I was willing to, like, wait. Like, I was okay with that. Like, we have a lot of stuff we are processing as a community here, and the film is going to be here. HBO Max is patient. But wait a minute. Are y'all really having conversations about pulling down the statues of people who raped our ancestors? You're trying to pull them off of pedestals and platforms while you're giving a platform to a person who, like, literally raped me and people we know who are alive today? Is that what y'all are doing right now? Because now I'm feeling a way. Mm-hmm. And then he went on Tidal. So, and there's been a really deafening lack of a response from kind of very prominent Black people who are closely adjacent to Russell Simmons and L.A. Reid. So when you put them together, that kind of is the whole, like, there's, like, the table in the cafeteria of, like, powerful Black people, and Russell's at that table and L.A. Reid is at that table, and I haven't heard from a lot of other people who are also at that table who could make a difference. And that is upsetting to me, again, because of the message it sends to other survivors.
Yeah, I wanted to know, you know, our show is about having, like, complex and complicated conversations. And I feel like something that you said in the documentary kind of reflects that. And you talk about being kind of hesitant to come forward with your story because you didn't want to let the culture down, because you love the culture and you loved Russell Simmons. I'm wondering for you, how did you ultimately come to the decision that you were going to participate in, you know, the New York Times story and this documentary moving forward?
So I got to that place when I realized it wasn't just me. When I read the accounts of the two women who'd come forward about both Russell Simmons and Brett Ratner, that took my breath away. That suddenly changed the analysis for me from, I will suffer in silence, and that's on me, because it serves the greater good. We don't need to give mainstream media another Black boogeyman that's gonna then make my son more vulnerable and every Black man I love more vulnerable, because y'all just, you know, gave them a headline that's fueling this mythology that put those boys in Central Park in danger. And I know that we all look alike to them. And so Russell Simmons gets a little oxygen out here. What does that mean for every Black man and boy that I love? So I'm gonna take this one for the team. Until then, I realize I'm not just taking it for the team. There's other women out here who need me to speak up. And I've actually read that a lot of survivors, you know, like survivors of, you know, like incest and other, you know, other scenarios, it's like when they know that it's not just them, but now it's their sister. You know, it's not just them, but now it's their cousin. All of a sudden they're like, oh, no. Like, I'm not going to just, you can't do that to them. And so when I realized that there were other women, that's when I reached out to Jodi Kantor. And then when Jenny Lumet came forward as a Black woman and Russell specifically called her a liar, that's when I was like, oh, no. So now it's not just about me, like, sucking it up. It's about me. Now I feel like it's moved from me sort of suffering in silence for the team to actually me being a coward if I don't come forward. Because these women need me to be brave for them, because they've been brave. And now I realize he's a serial predator. So how many other women are out there? And if I don't say something, who else might be harmed? Who else has been harmed and needs me to be the person that gives her the courage? So that's it. It's when it went from just me to us, that's when I was like, oh, well, now I have to say something, because it's not just about me anymore. It's about all of us.
So when I watched the documentary, I reached out to Travell and I was like, this one thing that you talked about really, really solidified for me, like, this is a perfect conversation for our show. You talked about the dichotomy of loving Russell Simmons and loving hip hop and also having been harmed by Russell Simmons and hip hop and the culture that was created around it, and how and someone else in the doc spoke about, like, there's this thing from Black women to protect Black men, but also not knowing what to do with the harm that comes from them. Can you speak to what that felt like for yourself and what you've kind of arrived at in this whole process?
Yes. So when I came to New York City in 1992, I was 21 years old. Rap didn't even have a Grammy category. I think there'd been fewer than a half dozen rap records that had gone platinum. It wasn't clear that rap wasn't going to be like disco or whatever. Like, people thought it was a fad. And Russell had this vision and this capacity to bring the genre to a broader platform and to give it staying power. And I was incredibly proud of that as a Black person. I was incredibly proud of hip hop, frankly, for not playing the respectability politics game that I think is a trap for Black people. Just like I think the idea that if you are respectable as a woman, you're not going to be raped. But what did she wear? What did she wear is kind of like saying, well, what did George Floyd do with his hands? Doesn't matter what she wore. Doesn't matter what Philando Castile did everything right. You know, Rayshard Brooks did everything right. Like, it doesn't matter if it's a rapist, is a rapist. If it's a racist, is a racist. And I really loved hip hop's rejection of respectability politics. I loved the swagger of it. I loved the boldness of Russell's vision. I love that he was creating Black wealth outside of the sort of Cosby show version of what it meant to be a successful Black person. It was like a different kind of Black person that was bolder and had more just, like, you know, irreverence. And so I just didn't want to undermine that momentum. I just thought that was way more important than my personal pain. And, you know, I'm still very proud of everything that he accomplished. I learned a lot from Russell Simmons. I mean, that's what's very complicated. It's like, I really did learn watching from him. I mean, even today, when people ask me, well, what would I like to do? Who are my role models? And I'm like, well, you know, the way Russell Simmons built this sort of multi sort of media platform is still something that I respect. And so, you know, I'm trying to find a way to, you know, and I hope we can all find a way to reconcile ourselves with the truth of really what he did and what he is. And he's really not just sort of like a gray level kind of like bad actor. He is a nefarious, diabolical, cruel, violent predator. Okay, like, really, like, truly. And we have to just figure out how to deal with that. And we have to figure out how to not throw out the baby with the bathwater. And, you know, it's again, it's hard for me not to keep thinking of them together as a Black woman, but it's the same thing. It's like, we can tear the statues down and still figure out how to love America. Like, we can still find a way to love these documents that really hold up a beautiful ideal of a society that we've just never been. Why can't we figure out how to live up to the creed and get rid of this fantasy that these people were somehow perfect? Why do I have to navigate a world with statues of people who brutalized my ancestors? And why do I have to navigate a world with a person who brutalized me on a pedestal? Like, literally, guys, why can't we walk and chew gum at the same time? Like, why can't we figure out how to love hip hop and love ourselves as Black people without feeling like somehow that has to include internalizing this toxic multi-generational pain that is literally doing the work of white supremacists for them. You know, I talk about in the film this castle in Ghana where the enslaved people were held before the Middle Passage, and the women were systematically raped. Their ankles were chained to a cannonball. They were raped day after day, all day, every day. Half of them were pregnant by the time the Middle Passage was completed. And the men who attempted to defend our women, our men, were taken in a cell called the Condemned Cell with no window to die. I went on there on my tour. They shut the door. They turned on a flashlight. There's scratch marks on the wall. Okay? And so here's my thing. The Condemned Cell that they used to stop black men from defending black women, it's in our mind now. If we don't look at what happened to the black women who were raped by Russell Simmons and the black women who were abused by R. Kelly, then the white supremacists, they don't even need to put us in a cell because we're walking around with it in our head. We're doing their job. So let's stop doing their job and let's be stronger and healthier internally so we can actually overcome. I want us to overcome. I'm so proud to be black. I'm so proud to be the descendant of slaves. Okay? For whatever, however I look, it's like that brilliant piece in the New York Times. I have rape-colored skin. I've never met a white relative in my life. All four of my grandparents are black. All eight of my great-grandparents went to segregated schools. If they went to school and they couldn't vote, they drank from the colored water fountain. I'm black. I'm proud of it. I want us to overcome. So let's stop harming ourselves. Let's stop doing their work for them.
Mm-hmm. It feels like to me, to that point, you know, seeing a couple episodes ago, we talked about like our complex thoughts and feelings about like a platform such as The Breakfast Club. And it grew out of, you know, Russell Simmons being on there and, you know, we feeling as if, you know, them kind of being complicit, you know, in a lot of ways in terms of like not attempting to like truly hold him accountable. I'm wondering for you, and you spoke about this earlier, you know, what does a response like that, what does Russell Simmons' presence on such a massive black platform like The Breakfast Club say to you about where we are in this conversation right now about like holding in particular black men accountable for the harm that they, you know, enact on the rest of the community?
Whoa. When The Breakfast Club had Russell Simmons on their platform, the same platform where Joe Biden just went and Kamala Harris, and I mean, you know, it doesn't get bigger in mm-hmm. terms of a platform for black listeners to talk about Black Lives Matter. Like, I mean, how many actual qualified people did they skip to get to him? So this wasn't really about Black Lives Matter. This was about resuscitating his reputation. You know, they started with a question about, I'm so sorry your best friend died. I mean, like, and by the way, I was fond of Andre Harrell. Andre was cool with me. I think it's a huge loss, but I'm sorry. You're going to just start there? Like, he's literally like, why don't you ask him about his dog next? I mean, like, how much of a softball interview is this going to be? Mm-hmm. And then they just let him spew aspersion after aspersion against me and the other survivors. They didn't push back. They were completely not grounded, in fact. But they let him just dangle one other thing after another out there, like, kind of shaking, you know, the credibility of our stories, which, I mean, there's a 3,000-word piece in the New York Times that has never been challenged since December 2017. So I don't know what he's talking about. And I'm also not going to allow him to separate me from Salai or Sherry or Jenny or Alexia or any of them, because that is also insidious. We are together in this. But what it said to me is that black women don't matter. That's what it said to me. It said black women still don't matter to black people. In the black community, black rape survivors don't matter. That they were picking a side and they chose the side of the powerful predator over the not famous, not powerful black women victims. He is a serial rapist and many of his victims are black women. And the black community told me by having him on The Breakfast Club and by not speaking out against it in without with any real sort of focus and that it told me that I don't matter, and it told me that we don't matter, and it told me that maybe Black women and girls still don't matter. And that's just devastating to me. It's really devastating to me. It's dangerous. It's dangerous. It's really chilling, the impact, the effect that it's having on every survivor is watching how this is playing out. They are all watching. And we are sending them a message. And it's not a good message.
I think finally, as we talk about survivors and the messages that we're sending to survivors, I think one of the things that was a bit inspiring at the end of the documentary is seeing how you are moving forward with your life. And you talk about having left music for a long time and kind of starting to reintroduce that back into your life. As we're thinking about the messages that we're sending to survivors, I would love for you to, you know, kind of give us an update on where you are, what's going on with you now, where you see yourself going, going forward as you continue to move forward in your life.
So what I would say to any survivor listening is it's so important for you to tell somebody. First of all, it's important for you to tell yourself what happened, because I tried not to even tell myself. It's important for you to embrace being a victim and not just a survivor. I do not like skipping to the survivor part. This isn't a movie. This isn't Marvel Comics. I'm going to be a victim for the rest of my life. And I am also a survivor every day that I wake up and am productive to the best of my ability for the rest of my life. But the victim deserves compassion. The victim deserves space. I have to include her. I can't be so ashamed of her that I skip past her. Something wrong with her. She was hurt. Mm. That part of me is real, and that part of you is real and deserves your own compassion. She deserves to be seen by you. But tell somebody as soon as you can find somebody safe. Email yourself and maybe save those emails until you can find somebody to forward them to. But also tell your community. Whatever community is forcing you to coexist with your abuser has to know, whether it's your family, so you have to, whether you have to be around that person at Thanksgiving or holidays, I need for that community to understand what it means for his face to be on the mantle. I need them to understand what they are doing to you. If it's somebody famous, then maybe you need to tell the New York Times or somebody like that. If it's your school, then you need to tell somebody at the school. If it's your job, try to find somebody at your job. Because here's what I discovered to your question about making music again. I thought that I buried this box that contained the pain and the shame and then just the horror of what Russell did to me in a box that I would never need again. And when I opened up that box to tell the world what happened, thinking I was being brave and I'm doing this for the other survivors, and it wasn't going to affect me. Well, it did affect me. It rocked my world. It brought me to my knees. I had to suddenly bake in the rape victim part of my identity that I had avoided. But I also found some other stuff in that box. I found my swagger. I found my creativity. I found the fearlessness of that 24-year-old woman. I found this brightness, this light was in the same box. So I promise you, if you think you don't need what's in that box, you do. You do, because there's a part of you that is beautiful in the same box where the pain lives. And I need you to unlock that box. I need you to find a safe space and a safe person to unlock that box and let it all out and bring it all back into your spirit so you can shine, which is what I am doing. It's why I'm making music again. I'm so grateful that I met this young woman, Ella Wilde, whose mom read the New York Times article. That's why I met with her. And she's really the artist I hoped would walk in my door every day I did A&R. She's the whole deal. She's a singer. She's a songwriter. She plays the guitar. She plays the piano. She's got a great voice. She's got a great presence. She literally writes hits, like, out the gate. Mm-hmm. For real. And that's who I wanted to find every day of my life. Like Alicia Keys meets Alanis Morissette meets something. And I was hoping every day that I did my job, I would meet her. Like, that was my dream artist. And now I look back and I'm glad I didn't meet her in those environments where I couldn't have protected her, because I couldn't even protect myself. Mm. You know, I have an artist named Toya that I signed at Arista when LA Reid first started, And he loved it. He loved the album. She had the number one crossover record in the country. It was called I Do. But he wanted me to come listen to her album in his hotel. That was the beginning. And I kept not going. And then one day he said in a staff meeting, I listened to the Toya album in my hotel. And he looked right at me and he said, I don't like it anymore. Everybody take your pen out and draw a line through Toya. We're not chasing it. And the promotions people were like, but it's like testing off the charts. It's like a hit. It's testing really well at radio. This is like a dream. We've got this. We can break her. Like break her meaning we can blow this chick up. She could be like Rihanna before there was Rihanna. And he killed it because I wouldn't sleep with him. And so it's not just me. There's other people. You know, there was an artist I was working with at Def Jam. I just walked away from his album. His name is Colly Ranks. He didn't know for 22 years what happened until he read the article in New York Times. So it affected him. Luckily, John Legend got another deal. Kanye got another deal. You know, but I'm just grateful that Ella Wilde came into my life at a point where I have autonomy. I don't have a lot of resources. I don't have a label deal of my own, but I'm working on that. I'm going to figure it out. And I'm going to do everything in my power to block and tackle for that young Black woman, to create space for her to shine and show up as an artist. And I hope that every survivor unlocks the pain to find their power, because they are connected. And I don't want you to wait 22 years like I did.
Our thanks to Drew Dixon. The documentary is called On the Record. It's streaming right now on HBO Max, so go check it out. It is a phenomenal piece of storytelling and really, really just makes you think a lot. So make sure to go check that out on HBO Max. Before we go, we want to know your thoughts on this topic, this conversation, and the documentary. You can go tweet us at Fanti Podcast, or you can find us on Instagram at Fanti Podcast. When we come back, we've got our dishonorable mentions and your listener feedback. Don't go anywhere. Fanti is supported in part this week by Arta Wigs. Arta Wigs is founded by a wife and wife team. That means that there's some queers, there's some lesbians. They probably met and moved in really quickly. You know how that goes.
You're disrespectful.
But they're also a team of cosplayers, and we love that. That's really cool. They couldn't find the products that they were looking for on the market, and they wanted to create them themselves, and so they did. And they're committed to meeting the needs of the cosplay and drag communities.
So they sent us each a wig. Mine is gray silver. Jared's is a blonde. Perfect
for his
skin tone. Mine
is a platinum blonde. It is a hot blonde.
Perfect for his skin tone. And I found...
first of all, was that a read? Was that a light skin joke?
Okay. It was not. Tip-toe, I'm saying
baby,
it compliments
tip-toe.
You.
Okay.
Anyway, if you want to figure out what type of color works well with your skin tone, grabbing yourself one of these Arta wigs, I think, is a good thing to do. You can spice up your Zoom happy hour calls if you are venturing out into the world, which I hope you're not. And at least I hope if you are, you have a mask on. You can pop that wig on and give you a little bit of incognito vibes as you go out in the streets.
Because most of y'all haven't been to the salon or to the barber, honey, and those edges might be looking rough and tumble. Baby,
not rough and tumble.
Listen, honey, honey, that kitchen might be bitching. No shade. Like you don't know what the situation is. So maybe you do want to try out a wig.
So if you do, for a limited time, our listeners of Fanti can use the code ARTAFANTI to receive 10% off your purchase of $30 or more. Just go to ArtaWigs.com, that's ArdaWigs.com, and enter ArtaFANTI at checkout, ArdaFANTI. That's ArtaWigs.com, and enter ArtaFANTI at checkout and create with us.
Fanti is also brought to you this week by Raycon. Whether you're working at home or working on your fitness, you definitely want to make sure that you're listening to what you're listening to and not what Travel's neighbors are doing. Or trying to figure out why I can hear my neighbors arguing downstairs when I've never heard them for years. Whatever it is, you want to make sure that when you're trying to listen to your music or if you're trying to listen to Fanti, you are not going to be hearing other things. What's great about the Raycon earbuds is that they are noise canceling. They go into your ear and really, you don't have to worry about the other sounds going on around you. They start about half the price of any other premium wireless earbuds on the market, and they sound just as amazing as other top audio brands.
Now, all of your favorite celebrities really endorse the Raycon earbuds, whether that's Snoop Dogg, Cardi B, Melissa Etheridge, shout out to her, Brandy, J.R. Smith, all of the folks. And so if you want to join them and get your own pair of Raycon earbuds, now's the time to get the latest and greatest. Get 15% off your order at buyraycon.com/fanti. That's buyraycon, buyraycon.com/fanti for 15% off Raycon wireless earbuds. buyraycon.com/fanti. Alrighty, we're going to get into our listener feedback this week, and we have an email here from Sean, who made sure to let us know that because her name is a gender-neutral name, that she is a woman.
Okay.
And Sean says, I'd love to think that we would be friends IRL, so I'm going to tell you like I would tell my friend.
Wait a minute now, Sean.
Listen, hold on. She getting ready to read us, honey.
I already don't feel safe here.
Okay. She says, how the hell y'all have an episode about Kanye and his, quote, presidential run and not bring up the possibility that he is trying to cause enough of a distraction to help his buddy Trump win again? Since I cannot stand that man, he doesn't get his full name. I should say she asterisked it out. And
I'm not even going to follow up on that.
Leave it. And she's like, back to my original point. I thought for certain you would have a take on that. If you do, I'd love to hear it. So, do you have a take on the distraction of it all?
So, Sean, when Travell brought this email up to me in our meeting, I was like, of course we said that. And he was like, no, you didn't. I was like, no,
I don't think we did.
I'm sure I said that. And apparently, I guess I didn't. But no, I am absolutely with you on this, Sean. There is a possibility of like this being coordinated, right? I don't think that it is. I don't think it's like Donald Trump using Kanye West to try and get him to help with. I don't think it's that, but it absolutely could be. And I mean, I think we've all watched enough like Scandal and How to Get Away with Murder and those types of shows to believe that anything is possible in these kinds of things. And I think it would seemingly be effective because there are so many people who were so excited that Kanye was running. Chance the Rapper was on Twitter. I think it was on Monday. Like, well, what would be the difference between Kanye and Biden? And I was like, sis, how much time do you have? Like, what the fuck are you talking about? So you're absolutely right, Sean. Thank you for getting into our asses about that because you're absolutely right. It could definitely be that. If you have feedback for the show, you can email us fanti@maximumfun.org. That's fanti@maximumfun.org. All right. Dishonorable mentions. Are you ready?
Dishonorable mentions. Let's
okay.
do it.
So these are the stories of the people that caught our attention this week that deserve a call out, either for their good or their stupid. I'll go first here. I want to give an honorable mention to Victor Jackson. Hey, I am saying he is a Black LGBTQIA plus icon in the making. He was a part of Global Black Pride, which was a pride event that happened online. And it had all kinds of different performances and speakers and things. And they had performances kind of like we were talking about what we love from the BET Awards, like these filmed performances that were edited and choreographed and all that. He had one of those performances and it was fantastic. He has a song called Venom and another song called He Belongs to the City. You can get both of those on Apple Music or wherever you get your Slayworthy audio, and look up Victor Jackson. It's just such a good song. Take a listen to a little bit of He Belongs to the City. All right. So again, Victor Jackson, check him out. You can check out his music. He's fantastic. You might also know him from The Real Housewives of Atlanta. He's often...
I was going to say, he was a choreographer, right?
He does a lot of choreography for Candy and other artists and things like that. So check him out.
Check him out. My first... honorable mention, I'm going to start it off nicely.
Okay.
It's going to go to the legendary Gina Prince Bythewood, who has a new movie on Netflix called The Old Guard. If you haven't seen it yet, I need you to check it out. It is kind of that high action summer blockbuster style movie. Led by Charlize Theron, our wonderful African American, Charlize Theron. she's from South Africa, right? Or is that the other one?
She is quite technically African American. Yes.
Okay, just making sure I had the right one. You know, sometimes I get
it's a whole debate for people, but that's a different conversation.
But she's the lead, as well as Kiki Layne, who you might remember from If Beale Street Could Talk. She was one of the leads in If Beale Street Could Talk. But it's a really beautiful movie, and there's this cute scene that they have between these two characters, these two kind of assassin-like, I guess you could call them, but like assassin for good characters who
Nothing
are
like
gay.
Nothing like a sweet moment between assassins.
But they're gay and they're like immortal, so like they've loved each other for like hundreds of years, and there's this really cute scene. I want to play a clip of that particular scene.
Ano usato del gas.
I told you. Shut up.
I need to know he's okay.
That's sweet. What is he, your boyfriend?
You're a child. An infant. Your mocking is thus infantile. He's not my boyfriend. This man is more to me than you can dream. He's the moon when I'm lost in darkness, and warmth when I shiver in cold, and his kiss still thrills me even after a millennium. His heart overflows with a kindness of which this world is not worthy of. I love this man beyond measure and reason. He's not my boyfriend. He's all and he's more.
Incurable romantic.
Now, when I tell you that monologue, baby, like, that's the type of love that I want, honey.
Oh, okay.
So shout out to them. If you haven't seen it, make sure you go check out The Old Guard on the Netflixies.
It is definitely in my queue because everyone keeps talking about how good it was. So I'm going to give a, I think you did this a couple weeks ago. It's a dishonorable, it's a honorable mention with a dishonorable twist. So, like, yes. I want to give a shout out to Viola Davis and Dario Calmes. I hope I'm saying his last name correctly.
Probably not.
Dario Calmes. I know you ain't talking. hello, pot. My name is Kettle. Viola Davis and Dario Calmes. Viola Davis is finally on the cover of Vanity Fair. And this is the first time a black man has been I think it's the first time a black person. Was ever the photographer for a cover of Vanity Fair. While that sounds exciting and milestone, think about how long Vanity Fair has been around. That's a problem, right? And the thing that one, I'm excited for Viola and Dario in this moment. And first of all, these photos of Viola that Dario did are fantastic. My new home lock screen is Viola with this hair looking back and looking gorgeous. But it also frustrates me because they didn't even have a black person write this article. And I would wonder, I don't know the answer to this question, but I would wonder if there is a black person on staff that could do this work, that could do this story, or they could have hired a freelancer to do it or whatever. But like, it's just frustrating to continue to see magazines and outlets and publications celebrate blackness and celebrate that kind of thing. We saw this with the Hollywood Reporter last year when they did the 60 some odd black female writers, but it wasn't written by a black female, like that kind of stuff. So this is a mixed one.
Yeah, I mean, I believe they have a handful of black people who work there across a variety of different departments. I agree that I really wish that, you know, a black person was able to cover that. You know, I'm available, you know, next time.
Listen.
I'm just saying.
The email address is easy.
And the images, I think the images are fine. I would, you know, the inspiration behind said images, according to Dario, I just want to, you know, interrogate and have conversations about.
What did he say?
So the image is the image of Viola Davis and her back exposed is inspired by this legendary image of an enslaved person who the wounds of being whipped.
Oh, my God.
I think it's called the scourged back or something like that. But that was his inspiration for that particular image that made it to the cover. He did not think it would be the cover, but you know, the folks in leadership thought it was powerful. And you know, there's a lot of conversations about like that choice and that idea. But I think this is one of the moments, right, where we can hold the complexities of both like applauding that a black person finally gets to be in this role and that Viola gets to be in all her glory and regality on the cover, while also having, you know, a conversation about the meanings behind the images and the ideas and the thoughts and the intentions and otherwise behind the actual imagery, for sure.
One may say it's complex and complicado. See what I did?
I hate you so much. My dishonorable mention is going to produce, well, I don't actually know who it goes to, so I'm going to tell the story and then you can tell me who the mention actually goes to.
This feels like work.
But producer Tony Cervone, I hope I said that right, he revealed late last week, earlier, maybe over the weekend, that Velma from the Scooby-Doo was always intended to be a lesbian. Hmm. That's how he wrote it in the original script all those many years ago, apparently. But the studio apparently had issues with it and made him, like, tamp it down. And so he wrote in a relationship between Velma and Shaggy, and the goal and the idea was that later down in further seasons she would come out. But like that never happened. And so I guess my dishonorable mention is just to this general idea of, like, one, queer people having to date straight people in order to figure out their sexuality, but also I'm tired of all of this, like, rewriting of history. Y'all wait 30-40 years later to tell me that Dumbledore is gay. Sis, put it on the page and put it on the screen, or keep it to yourself. That is how I feel about that.
Wow, I really wish we could get more emotion out of you. Okay, there's that. Thank you for Scooby-Doo and the Fuhrer. No, that is actually really frustrating. One of these that we want to tag team on is Naya Rivera. I don't know if it's an honorable mention or not, but just, like, wanted to lift up her name and say, like, that whole story has just been such a heartbreaking story to watch unfold.
Yes.
And the photo of the mother with, I believe, her brother, you know, at the water's edge with her mom's arms wide open, that I saw on the B. Scott Instagram, you know, just kind of like seemingly wailing or praying for her. And then the Glee cast out there. And I saw some tweets, and I didn't like fact check this, but I saw some tweets saying that the day her body was found was 7 years to the day of when Cory Monteith,
yes,
you know, died by suicide. So, just, you know, sending love and, you know, all of the thoughts to that family, to that cast, to all of those folks. So,
yeah, I think a lot of people have been, like, affected. Because Naya Rivera, for those who don't know, on Glee, she kind of played, you know, one of those, like, legendary queer characters in terms of Santana was the name of the character. This, you know, Latinx bisexual woman representing kind of that queer sexuality, a queer sexual awakening for a lot of folks of diverse background. And I have to say, Sis was one of the better vocalists on the show. Like, everybody could sing, mm-hmm. but Sis was right up there behind, yeah, Amber Riley, okay? Yeah. And that's number one and number two, Amber Riley, Naya Rivera, okay? Forget that other girl. But I just want to shout out, similarly to you, to her, to the work that she did, the officials who's talked about finding her body, they said that their idea is that, you know, she was basically drowning, and she used her last breath to save her son. And so, you know, sending love and energy and support and all of that good juju to them and all of those affected, for sure.
Absolutely. So that is a show. We want to thank you all for joining us. Before we go, we want to just say thank you to everyone who's really gone out of their way to support the show. As a Max Fund member, you're truly the reason that we're able to continue making the show, and we can't thank you enough for that.
And again, if you are interested in becoming part of what I've now coined as the Fanti Fam, okay, hashtag Fanti Fam. If you want to become a member,
is that what we're using on social now, Fanti Fam?
That's what we're using. I've coined it. Yes, it's okay. Done.
It's okay. Coined. Ding.
Gavel down.
I don't know if that's how you coined something.
But if you would like to become a member and support the work that we do here and the work that we do at Maximum Fund, you can join at MaximumFund.org/join. Again, you can give us $5, $10 a month, similar to a Patreon, so that we're able to continue doing this particular work. And if for whatever reason you aren't able, right, to give of us financially, we'd love to see you give us a 5-star review on Apple iTunes, Apple Podcasts. Let the world share with the world, actually. Now, I usually just say your friends and your family. But guess what? Tell the whole world about what we're doing here at Fanti. Stop laughing at me.
I'm not even really sure what you're asking them to do there, but yes.
I'm asking them to spread the word. If you are not able to financially support the show, spread the word about the show, okay? By word of mouth, because that's one of the major ways, right, that more people find out about the good that we are providing. And as always, if you have a comment or a suggestion about this week's show or any other, you can tweet us at Fanti Podcast on all the socials or on Instagram at Fanti Podcast as well, or send us an email at fanti@maximumfun.org.
Our music is produced by Corice. You can find him wherever you get your music. That is Core.ece. And our photo and video graphics and all that stuff are done by Ashley Nguyen. Our thanks to both of them for their creative genius and being a part of the show. Fire up the air horns. We want to say thank you to our producer, Laura Swisher. I wish people could just see how you look when you're doing it. It's
the disrespect.
You look, well, no, it's not disrespect. You just look like you're having the time of your life. Go get ready. And also Jordan Callis.
Burm, 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 burm. Oh, sorry, Jordan. Sorry, Jordan. That was because Jared tried to play me.
I wasn't playing you. I was saying it was cute. Why are you so upset? No, I'm not doing it over for you. This has been a production of Maximum Fun. We're having a good time.
You're disrespectful.
MaximumFun.org.
Comedy and culture.
Artist owned. Audience supported.
Travel.
Really? The disrespect.
Trevel.